This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Week before last, a protest making its way through the Bronx in New York City was met with what our WNYC Gothamist colleague Jake Offenhartz called, quote, a premeditated operation to trap, pepper spray, bludgeon, and arrest marchers en masse at the stroke of curfew. NYPD Commissioner Dermont Shea told him, oh, no, there was no choice.
We intercepted them literally, Jake, as they were bringing a gun and gasoline and weapons to the scene of that. That's actually what happened.
Nope, none of that, except the name Jake, was true. The episode was a tale of two forms of police brutality. One is excessive force wielded primarily against people of color. The second is violence against the truth, the planted evidence, the false police testimony, and the suborning of perjury used to frame the innocent, sometimes to close cases, sometimes to protect the guilty, sometimes to settle scores. And the justice system knows it. Certainly in New York, where local DAs maintain lists of cops with credibility problems, whether because false testimony subverts justice or just endangers prosecutions, they share info about who in blue is just not to be trusted. Till now, who they have not often shared the lists with are defense attorneys or the public. Enter then another WNYC Gothamist colleague, investigative reporter George Joseph. He's used Freedom of Information filings to dislodge such lists, and for the past 14 months has been reporting on police lies and cover-ups in and around New York City. George, welcome to On the Media.
It's great to be here.
In the course of your reporting about tainted prosecutions in the city of New York, you came to discover about an adjoining jurisdiction, just north of the Bronx in Westchester County, the town of Mount Vernon. There was a whistleblower, a cop, who had learned of all sorts of illegalities within the department, but could get nobody to pay attention.
The officer is named Murashaya Bavel. He goes by Mike. And at first, what I did know is that this guy is an active cop. He had already filed a lawsuit previously, which failed for procedural reasons, in which he accused fellow officers, who were still on the force, by the way, of stealing and assaulting residents in broad daylight in front of fellow officers.
I saw guys getting beat up. I saw money being taken, reports being changed. I saw what was happening, and people weren't standing up.
For years, he had tried publicly to file harassment complaints with the city, to file legal actions, a lawsuit, for example, in 2015. And he didn't see any change in the narcotics unit, which he was making allegations about. He didn't see any change with new leaders coming to the city or the police department. And so at the same time as he was making these public allegations, he was quietly on his own for years, calling up his colleagues, casually talking for hours about many different things, occasionally slipping in questions about things he had seen in the hopes that they would talk about what they had seen.
You guys have nothing.
Oh, what you mean? The cops didn't lock him up for no reason, right?
Yes, it was a false arrest.
Oh.
He was driving one of those armored police Humvees through the blue wall of silence. Informing on other cops can yield horrible consequences. What repercussions has he felt?
Quite a bit. In addition to silence treatment and people not talking to him anymore, he's alleged found a rat toy placed by his locker. There was a time when he was at roll call and a supervisor joked about rats being in the building and he claims was gesturing to him while doing so.
We're 12 seconds, there's rats. Not like the rats here in headquarters.
All right, we've discussed the blue wall of silence, which is a kind of honor code among dishonorable. But there are also statutory obstacles against revealing police misconduct to the public. Tell me, please, about 50A.
50A is a very New York-specific law that was initially conceived of as a privacy law to protect the personnel records of police officers, I don't think people really disagree that things like officers' medical records or social security numbers need to be handed out to the public or public records requesters like me. The issue is it's been increasingly interpreted by courts and agencies in a very capacious way, such that things that some would argue were not intended to be covered by the law, and I'm stressing the point some would argue, are now covered and protect vital records of public interest, including police disciplinary records. So whereas in Ohio, where I've reported before, I can do a public records request for a police disciplinary investigation. And not only do I get the administrative police investigation files, I can even get the audio of the interviews with witnesses after the investigation has concluded. But here in New York, we don't even get to know the outcome of the disciplinary investigations or the substance of the allegations in the first place when police internal affairs bureaus conduct such investigations. In our reporting in Mount Vernon, for example, I've had to rely on leaked documents and documents from sources that are not through official channels to even be able to see and get at some of these internal police misconduct allegations and records.
As we have this conversation, there is a motion in the New York State Assembly to repeal 50A. And it, I suppose, because of this political moment, has an awful lot of support. Let's just say it has passed by the time this conversation finds its way to the audience. Do you think that will change the dynamic for people like you and for the public trying to get information on cops with an unsavory past?
Yeah, I think it'll really be opening the floodgates. For me personally, as a journalist who is investigating a very specific context right now in Mount Vernon and a very specific group of officers, I'm very excited for these records to become public.
Society has faced these questions before on the matter of pedophile priests. Historically, there were complaints and they were either ignored within the diocese or the priest was shuffled from one parish to another. The Vatican itself was a part of this process. The parallels seem eerily familiar, and yet there doesn't seem to be the consensus on the issue of cops with a bad history as there was for priests. Is this a moment when society's reckoning on this subject is subject to rapid change?
Yes. I think what's tricky about systematic reform, though, is unlike the Catholic Church, which is a famously hierarchical institution in which decisions are made at the top, and someone and some group, let's say the Curia, can be held liable and has information in their possession that they should have acted on. Our system of law enforcement in the United States is so decentralized. There are hundreds of police departments and law enforcement agencies and prosecutors' offices across the country that are all in communication with each other, but are acting and operating separately. And so every single place has to have a separate political battle and reform discussion for change to happen. Often people talk about the federal level, what did Trump or Obama do? But they're really not making decisions for day-to-day policing. They can sometimes use grants or Justice Department investigations to try to have some leverage over police departments if they want to, but the real policymaking and culture setting is at the ground level. So it's a tougher problem than the Catholic abuse scandal. We do see officers who are fired or who are quietly dismissed going to other departments. There was a big investigation by a consortium of California media groups, and they tracked how officers with really egregious cases of abuse, in some cases criminal convictions, were either allowed to stay on their forces, especially in small towns that are broke and are desperate to have police, or are allowed to move on to other towns like that. So it is a big problem.
When you write stories like this, there are two possible effects, sometimes both. One is that police departments just, you know, do not return your calls. They slow roll every request and so forth and so on. You get a little taste of the blue wall of silence. The other is that other informants, whistleblowers, emerge to put you onto still more stories, much like Bavel appeared in your life. Which is happening to you?
It's definitely both, and I wouldn't have it any other way. you know, you can't control how people are going to react to your reporting. All you can do is hope that it's accurate and helps people understand reality better. And if they choose to shut you out because of that, then that's on them. But there are a lot of people that are in the system, that are in police departments, that are in prosecutors' offices, that want the right thing to happen and want the truth to come out. And so they do reach out and they do have stories, and that does lead to more investigations. And that is certainly happening right now.
George, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
George Joseph is an investigative reporter for WNYC and Gothamist.com. On Friday, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a bill repealing 50A into law.